This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to The Morning Run. It's time now for The Property Show. I'm Melissa Idris with guest host Roshan Kanesan. We're going to be taking a closer look at the good work done by the social enterprise EPIC Collective, which stands for Extraordinary People Impacting Communities. EPIC, there you go. They help facilitate the building of homes for the indigenous community, specifically the Orang Asli people in Peninsula Malaysia. And the way they build these homes, it's really interesting. It's quick and it's affordable, and perhaps something that we could learn and apply to in other segments of property ownership. So I'm delighted to have on the show today to tell us more about EPIC, its CEO, Johnson Ooi. Welcome to the show, Johnson.
Thanks for having me here.
Wonderful.
Right. So Johnson, you know, EPIC has been around for a few years now. Mm-hmm. You've built over 100 homes. Yeah. You've worked with hundreds of volunteers mm-hmm. and some pretty big companies as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of people still unfamiliar with EPIC Homes. Mm-hmm. So for their benefit, how about we talk about why and how you got started?
Right. So EPIC Homes, although the building of the houses and being able to do it within 3 days and getting volunteers to get involved with all the work from scratch, usually that's what takes center stage. But it wasn't just about building the homes. We realized that there was a huge gap between the understanding of Orang Asli living mm-hmm. and urban people. And so one of the objectives that we set for ourselves was to build relationships.
Well, what do you mean a gap in understanding? So maybe I'm part mm-hmm. of this, I'm mm-hmm. part of the ill-informed. How do yeah. Orang Asli people live?
Right. So I was surprised to find actually that a lot of people in Malaysia, they even know that there are Orang Asli people in the peninsula. So that's one. Two is we have all sorts of preconceived notions and imaginations as to how they live. Mm-hmm. But likewise, it goes the same for them as well. Because typically, we don't really get many platforms to really mingle in a meaningful way. And so we wanted to get to the bottom of what exactly is causing many Orang Asli families to live in dilapidated houses. And we realized that the houses were really just a manifestation of a deeper issue. And in wanting to get to the root of the problem, we realized we weren't getting anywhere. First of all, because we weren't asking the right questions. Secondly, because they didn't know us, and therefore they didn't trust us. Mm. So why then would they want to share anything with us? And so relationship building became one of our primary objective in this program. And that was what then compelled us to come up with a 3-day home build, because we wanted to be able to help facilitate the relationship building between urban people and rural people. And I suppose that really underlines the purpose as to why EPIC Homes exists and why we do things the way we do it.
Sure. So when you said a little earlier, Johnson, about, you know, building relationships, that was the foundation of it, and you weren't asking the right questions, mm-hmm. what did you learn? And I'm sure you had to learn very quickly. What did you learn were some of the right questions to get the answers that you needed for the EPIC Collective?
I think that there is no silver bullet
sure.
question.
Yeah, but what were some of the wrong questions that you were asking? And then you had to very quickly, I'm sure, recalibrate.
Well, I think that we went in with the mindset, with our own definition of what basic living or what success means.
Right.
And so we then looked at them in a way where, because they lacked all of these things, then we came from a perspective of pity.
Oh, so yeah. You mean like as in no aircon,
yeah.
no...
Yeah, like, oh, so poor thing, right?
Okay.
You know, you
all
don't
right.
have this, you don't have that.
Right.
Oh, look at the house, you know. And so when we go there, we ask them, hey, you know, I mean, of course, I'm paraphrasing, but it's as naive as, how come you're so poor? You know, how come your house so broken? You know, and we realized that... No, that wasn't really the way to
it's
go
about,
about
as
it.
You mentioned, assimilating yeah. with nature.
That's right?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You're talking about assimilating or mm-hmm. communicating with the communities, right? The Orang Asli community. So why are you focusing on their homes? Why build homes for them?
So it really looks at the issue of this this transitioning of lifestyle. And so typically, in the original lifestyle of the Asli people, they are able to build their own homes.
Sure.
And they have access to good material. So when they build their homes with good material, their homes last a lot longer.
Good material and gathered from their surroundings. Wood and... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But since then, you know, you find a lot of different communities now being... that's been relocated to the fringes of the forest, closer to the cities. And hence, the type of materials, the quality of it, is not as good as it was before. Another thing would be a lot of them are now starting to adopt jobs, contract jobs, basically, or working in a factory. And with this new lifestyle, if their house breaks down, they don't have enough time to go back and be able to repair it or rebuild it as compared to how they were able to do it before.
Sure, because they're busy working, right? Yeah,
Now that they're working. And, of course, access to money as well. You know, so they are unable to purchase good quality material. And so you see many houses, they don't last very long. Floors easily break, roofs leak. Their walls have holes. Sometimes they use stuff that you can find around the city, like banners, tarpaulins, you know, to make up the walls. You know, so these are things that will help temporarily, but it doesn't really create a very conducive environment for a home.
So, what exactly do you build for them then?
Right. So, we've co-designed homes together with them, where we use contemporary material that can last a lot longer, but we've designed it in a way that suits their lifestyle. You know, so a lot more cross ventilation. You see a raised floor so that you can encourage storage underneath or allow the animals to go underneath. But the quality of these houses are a lot higher. And the idea is that with that, we're able to at least ease their burden, the temporary burden, and break that vicious cycle where people always say that, yes, the most important thing is education, but it's very difficult to get into the mind frame of wanting or holding importance in education if you're constantly trying to solve your everyday problems. You know, and so by providing them with a stable platform like a home, a family, you know, has that stability, has that safety net in that sense. So we believe that by changing that particular environment and providing them with that platform, then they will be in the mindset now say, okay, you know, maybe I can do better in school. Maybe I can look at holding a job.
We're speaking to Johnson Uy, the CEO of Epic Collective, the social enterprise. And we're going to come back and find out more. We're going to get him to break down the process of how exactly they help build homes for the Orang Asli community. Stay tuned to The Property Show on BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Melissa Idris with guest host Roshan Kanisan. And on The Property Show today, Johnson Uy, the CEO of the social enterprise Epic Collective. Now, you were talking a little bit about building or how you build these homes for the Orang Asli community here in Peninsular Malaysia. Can you break down the process for us? Exactly how do you determine where to build and who to build for specifically?
All right. So how we even get started as well, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of it relies on relationships. And so we don't parachute into communities where you say, hey, who wants free houses? It doesn't happen that way. So I think it's worth clarifying. How it normally works is we look out for NGOs, NGIs, non-governmental individuals.
I've never heard of that, Roshan. Yeah. Have you heard of NGIs?
Never heard of that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's getting popular.
NGIs, that's a new one.
Government officers who have already established relationships and are already doing good work together with these communities. And they hear about us and they introduce us to the community. And that's usually how we get started. But from there, once we establish a relationship with the community itself, actually most of our communities that we work with now has happened as a result of that organic relationship. So a local from that one village would then say, hey, I've got a cousin or auntie or uncle that I would like to introduce you. Would you like to go and check it out?
That is very cool. Word of mouth.
Yeah, that is very fascinating. So Is there a selection process, though? Like, is it just based on word of mouth, or do you have criteria?
Right. So that's how we get involved with the community in the first place. Right. But there is a process to go through. And it's also, again, to set that tone that it's really not just about the aid that is being provided, but it's about that greater understanding or that that platform that we're trying to create. And so when we go into a community, we usually do an engagement community, so done by what we call our pathfinders. Right, so
the
pathfinders is
that
a type
is a
of
cool
volunteer.
Job brochure.
That's another cool name. It really you're coming with a lot of cool terms here.
NGIs and pathfinders.
Yeah. So these pathfinders would then engage this community and work together with the village head, the Tok Batin, and the JKKK, the Jawatan Kuasa Kemajuan dan Keselamatan Kampung. And so we then work out together with them if there is a need in the first place, and if there's an interest. They would then put a call out to as many people as who's interested.
Okay.
And basically, we'll hold a community engagement activity where we're able to hear more from the community themselves, but at the same time, be able to determine for that community what selection criteria they would like to use. So typically, we'll look at your structural integrity of your existing houses, your spatial conduciveness, because sometimes you get 400 square feet, 600 square feet with 10, 15 people in it. You know, so there's a lot of, it's very cramped. You know, it's very hard to raise a family in such a condition. And then prioritization of children, growing up children or schooling children to old folks, people that cannot afford homes. And the last one would be being part of the Pay It Forward program. Where the Pay It Forward program is where we don't charge them money for their house, but they have to pay in sweat equity. And so they have to build 3 homes for their neighbors in the process.
I like this. Yeah. I like how you get involved. It's not a matter of, like what you said just now, parachuting in and saving the day.
Yeah.
You're getting people involved. You're creating ownership, really, over the development.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, so you had different ways of contributing towards the house, right? So let's talk about funding for the house. How much does an Epic Home cost?
An Epic Home costs 50,000 ringgit for a home. That usually builds about 400 or 600 square feet home.
An entire home costs 50,000 ringgit.
That's right.
And you think about the kind of prices that you pay for on-site built homes. Yep. So let's get this right. Yeah. How do you keep the cost so low?
I think that our cost is quite similar to the current homes that are also being issued out by different government agencies as well. But how we keep it low but ensure a high value, I suppose, is by reducing the time required.
So you're using modular building, right?
Modular building. Modular building, that reduces wastage, it increases the accuracy in how things come together. And of course, with the power of volunteers, you know, we're able to save a lot of time. You know, so typically, a normal home wouldn't take 2 to 4 months.
Sure.
So you can imagine that it's not just the cost itself, but the amount of time that you have to wait.
So when you say normal home, you know, building on site, brick by brick. This is kind of prefabricated in a factory?
Yeah. So I'm guessing modular homes, a lot of this prefabricated. Yeah. Where do you do that? And do you do it yourself?
No, we don't do it ourselves. We have different suppliers and manufacturers that we've been building relationships with for the last 8 years. But at the same time, so just to clarify, that is the one type of house, the version one house. And version two is a double story house as well.
Wow, okay.
But we are looking at working together with other solution providers as well to develop a catalog. Of course, within the price range, but develop options so that the families themselves, when they go through the process of choosing their house, there's actually options for them.
They get to choose their own house.
Correct. Yeah.
Could you paint a picture for us? I mean, I know this is radio, but let's use our words, and perhaps if you could paint a picture for us, Johnson. Mm-hmm. What would one of these houses like? Give me an option of the double story houses.
Okay, so the double story houses is typically so the modular housing system. It's modular because we wanted to be able to fit the size of the family, whether it's small or big. And at the same time, we realized that when you build in villages or in the jungle, you know, you don't get typical flat land to do it on. You know, and so sometimes you don't have enough space, or sometimes there's a tree in the way that they really love and they don't want to cut. You know, and so you can build around
that.
It.
Yeah, that's really cute.
And so the double story house is usually done in flood prone areas or in very tight spaces. Mm. A typical one would be say 800 square feet. It's 400 square feet, like a big square. Imagine each module being 100 square feet, and you put four of that together, you make one big square.
Sure.
And you put that on top of each other. And at the bottom, you have the kitchen and the living room, and sometimes either a store or an additional bedroom. And on the top, you'll have three bedrooms. And one living room.
That sounds like a standard house, right? But I mean, the fact that it's kind of prefabricated or modular means you can kind of customize it or move it around.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with it being modular, then we give the option. I mean, of course, it's not ideal. We hoped that it'd be like The Sims one day, right, where you can just switch things around.
Yeah, not quite like
but
that.
But that's
not,
in the ideal
Lego,
world.
Not Lego, let's just say.
But at the moment, they get to choose the orientation. Of the house itself, they get to choose the color of what they want the paint to be. They can choose where they want their kitchen and where they want their rooms to be. You know, so that's the kind of choice that they can make. But I think I it's worth clarifying, since I used double story as an example.
Sure.
The double story is not 50,000 ringgit. It costs a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah.
But still, 50,000 is really
good. Still really
low.
Yeah.
I do want to focus a little bit, Johnson, on the modular homes. I'm just kind of wondering about the broader applications, whether you think that this is something that can be widely adopted. It might even help solve whatever a crisis we have when it comes to affordable housing here in Malaysia.
So, I mean, if you're talking about the design itself, then I would say that the design that we have for the Orang Asli people would design together with the Orang Asli people for the Orang Asli people.
It fits their lifestyle,
correct,
their community.
And so if you're talking about the exact design being replicated in the city, I think that would be a bit strange. I don't know how many people actually...
you want a raised like floor or cross-ventilation. Maybe not quite in...
Maybe not quite. However, the principles or the design framework that we've used to come up with the house that we have right now, I think that can be replicated. In the city itself. After building homes with the Orang Asli people, we found that actually there are many urbanites. They're actually looking to move closer to nature. And so they are actually like taking their own future into their own hands, so to speak, buying their own land and wanting to build their own home. And so we've got a couple of projects where, using that same design framework, we've created a similar design, but with a little bit more budget.
All right, okay, you got some new projects in the works. Mm-hmm. What's next for Epic?
Right, so if you're talking about housing, then we've spent the last eight and a half years really incubating and refining this idea of turning our average citizen into a nation builder, where they can get involved in building homes for the marginalized communities. And so if we're talking about the Orang Asli people, we estimate about 80% of the entire Orang Asli population of 200,000 or 180,000+ people, they are in need of homes. So that's about 10,000 homes. And so we're looking at setting a target 5 years to be able to complete this once and for all.
Wow.
You know? But I think on the national scale as well, when you're talking about the Orang Asli people and you're talking about national unity, you know, it's not just about, you know, the typical races that
the
you
three
mentioned
main
itself.
Races, right?
Yeah.
This is part of our social fabric. Yeah.
But it's not just about ethnic groups, but it's also about the socio-economical, geographical divide as well, you know, where we actually don't even know or we're not familiar with each other as well. And so I believe that we're talking about unity and progress. You know, we need to make sure that everybody is taken into account. You know, and I believe that the Orang Asli people would really symbolize that, you know, if all of us come together to make this happen.
Well said, Johnson. I feel very inspired. I don't know
that
about you, Roshan.
Sounds like a nice Malaysia.
I feel
very
like,
nice
like that's a Malaysia I want to live in as well.
Malaysia 3.0.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on The Property Show today. That was Johnson Ui, CEO of Epic Collective. Thank you for all the good work that you've been doing
with your
team.
Yeah.
Been a pleasure having you on the show. I'm Melissa Idris with Roshan Kanisan for The Property Show. We've got the 10 o'clock news bulletin coming up next, so make sure you stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.